Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, live from Arizona, back in Scottsdale, joined by Matt, as always. And Matt, we missed you in Seattle, my friend. How was Utah this weekend?
What did I even do this weekend? I don't even remember. It was good though. It was solid. I think I did a lot of reading The Lord of the Flies. That's what my kids are doing right now. So a lot of that, but I don't know. It warmed up to about 60 or so. So that was pretty good.
That's nice. Yeah, it was not bad. So I was in Seattle this weekend. It wasn't too bad. It was like 50s. The Seahawks game was colder than the Washington Huskies game for some reason. But we're going to talk about that. I'm going over a trip because I went to 3 football games and an awesome golf course. So I'm going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about the NFL, where the halfway point of the year, my Niners are killing it, the only undefeated team left. And we might talk about some NBA stuff, depending on how much time we have. But it'll be a lot of NFL stuff today. But, Matt, let me talk about the weekend. And Matt and I, almost on purpose, don't really talk a whole lot before we're recording. So we're literally catching up right now for your listening pleasure. But this is literally the first time I've talked to Matt since I got back from Seattle.
Yeah, so I'm excited to hear everything.
So here's what happened. So our friend from high school, Garrett Peck, shout out to G, he flew into Scottsdale Wednesday night. Thursday, we went golfing at TPC Scottsdale, where the Phoenix Open is at. My ankle is broken, so not my best round, but very pretty course, super gorgeous. We were golfing with a guy named James from Virginia, who was out for a conference. So if James hears this, shout out to my guy, James.
No, wait, hold on. Real quick before we move on, when and how did you break your ankle?
Oh, did I not tell you about that?
No.
Oh, see, we literally are catching up right now. About like 2 weeks ago in rec softball, I was going to third base, and instead of sliding, I just like overran the third and was going to come back to it. But my cleats like got stuck in the ground, but my leg kept moving. So there's leg went one way, foot went another way. Huge crack. It actually the crack wasn't that big. It sounded big, but there's just a small fracture in my ankle.
Jeez, that is that rec league softball. That'll get you.
I've broken my ankle twice, and my hand I broke one time as well playing rec softball down here. Mm-hmm. So it's sketchy stuff. But yeah, so walking around Seattle was a bummer too because of my ankle. But yeah, so Wednesday, Thursday we went golfing. This is Halloween, by the way. So happy Halloween. And then Thursday night we went to the 49ers Cardinals game in Arizona. 49ers won 28-25. Garoppolo had a huge game, 4 touchdowns. Honestly, the Niners didn't look that great, so I'm glad they came away with a victory. But the running game didn't look so fantastic, and the defense didn't look great either. But I think, especially in the second half, Kyler Murray looked awesome, Matt. The Cardinals had all black jerseys and Kyler Murray had a black sleeve and some black wrist tape. So he's the best looking player out there.
Well, that's good. That's important.
And it looked good, play good. No, and he actually played really well too. You could tell he's just is one of those guys that's just like hard. And obviously, you know that watching him on TV, just hard to bring down, like just an incredible athlete. But watching him in person is just puts it on a whole nother level. So really impressed with Kyler Murray. But the Niners won. I think that has to do with, you know, short week, Thursday game on the road. Some weird stuff's going to happen. But so that's what we did Thursday. And then Friday night, we flew to Seattle. Saturday, went to the Washington-Utah game at the University of Washington. And Utah won. But, Matt, let me tell you, that was maybe the prettiest stadium I've ever been to.
Yeah.
The amount of times I said, way was just like I just kept saying because I was literally speechless. It's right on the water. We went and did the whole like sailgating thing where a bunch of people have like boats in like the little dock, so they take it out, do the tailgating thing out on the boat. Super pretty campus, University of Washington as well. So, and really loud stadium. Could not be more impressed with the University of Washington, their setting, the stadium, the campus in general. Huge Washington guy right here.
Yeah, that's cool. No, yeah, that's if I was going to go to a college football stadium, I would be more interested in going to Washington and Oregon than than a lot of those SEC stadiums, which I'm sure are great and that I'd like to do them. I just think, you know, that like on the water, that's got to be really hard to beat. Although that's probably what they say when they come to Utah and, you know, see the mountains and everything.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say, because like from BYU where we went, or the University of Utah, you can see like the mountains in the background. And from my seats, I couldn't like see the water because of the back end zone or whatever, but I could see like the trees and like the mountains behind the trees and everything like that. And they were changing colors, which in Arizona, I forgot trees did that because I'm just used to the cactuses and everything, the palm trees. But So it was like a bunch of like red, orange trees, and in the background, there was mountains. And we saw Mount Rainier. You can see from there, from walking around the stadium. You would love it. Honestly, it needs to be on college football fans' bucket list. Just so pretty. Great tailgating atmosphere. Fantastic fans. Utah played huge, though. Utah, I thought they were going to get blown out of the water. They were down 14-3 and then 21-13 separate times. And they just kept pounding and came away with a win. And they hadn't beaten Washington in a really long time. So, huge win for Utah in the Pac-12 South.
Yeah. That's good. No, that's, you know, I kind of thought they were done after USC, but they're looking good. Like I'm telling you, if they end up beating up Oregon, which is real possible, I think it would be hard to keep them out.
Yeah, I think it'd be hard for the committee to put Utah in over, like, let's say a one loss Oklahoma or a one loss Alabama or LSU or something like that. You know what I mean? So yeah. I'm not as sold as other people are that the Pac-12 champ is for sure getting into the playoff, but it's the best chance the Pac-12 has had in years since probably Washington went to the playoffs in 2016, I think that was.
Which is crazy that they've been so little.
Yeah. It's just Oregon the first year when they went to the national championship game, and then Washington last year, and they've missed it all the other times.
All right. Is that it? That's definitely the conference that has been the least times, right? I mean, the Power Five, obviously.
Yes, because the Big 12 missed it the first year, and they've been every year since. The Big 10 has missed it maybe twice. I kind of think just the one time, but maybe twice. But yeah, the Pac-12's been, ACC's been every time, SEC's been multiple times every year, and Pac-12, they've missed three or four at least. I can't like mix track of the years, but they've missed it three or four times.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, it makes sense. We've talked about how they kind of beat each other up, but it's just, I don't know. So anyway, well, that's good. Good for them. I'm still bitter that BYU can't beat them, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. So Saturday night, we just hung out in Seattle. Sunday, went to the Seahawks-Buccaneers game. And Matt, let me tell you, the Seattle on a Seahawks game is the closest thing I've seen to Barcelona when Barcelona has a home soccer game in the United States.
Really?
It was nuts, honestly. And I'd put the Giants there, but it's different with baseball because there's 81 home games in San Francisco. But yeah, Seattle probably takes the cake. There's so many Seahawks fans everywhere we went. Everybody's chanting, doing the Seahawks chant. Everybody, literally everyone has their jerseys on. The cops were yelling at us, like, go Hawks. Just like the whole city was into it. You know what I mean? It was just nuts. Super fun atmosphere. Stadium was incredible, as loud as it's hyped up to be.
Yeah. Now, did you let it be known that you hate the Seahawks?
No, I did not, because I didn't want to get beat up.
That's good. That's probably good.
I was a very silent 49ers fan. Because the 49ers are playing the Seahawks this week. That's the next game on Monday Night Football. So everybody was talking about, oh, you gotta get ready for the 49ers. And I just was pretty, I was like, yeah. Yep, football. Didn't say anything there. But it was a crazy game, man. I went to overtime. It was fun. Tampa Bay took Seattle overtime, but Seattle ended up winning the game. We were in, you know, the Seattle, how the Seahawks stadium, at the one of the end zone, it goes like up, like super straight up and like pretty narrow at the top.
Yeah.
That's the section we were sitting in. It's called the Hawk's Nest. So incredible view because you're looking like straight down basically the stadium. Great view. Super fun game. Can't say enough positive things about it.
That's good. See now, a younger version of yourself wouldn't have even been able to give them that, I don't think.
I've grown up a lot, Matt.
That's good.
For better or for worse, I've grown up a lot. You know, I try to be as unbiased as possible. Especially with football. With baseball, it's harder for me to not be biased. But especially with football, I try to be as unbiased as possible.
Right. That is going to be interesting, though, next week. I'm looking at it right now. Like, if a team is going to beat the 49ers, then it looks like the Seahawks might be the team to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't figure out if I think Seattle's good or not. Because, like, they got beat by the Ravens, who are a good team. I'm looking at the AFC. Let's go to the NFC. They beat Cleveland, who's not a very good team. They beat the Rams, but they also just went to overtime against the Buccaneers and barely beat Cincinnati. So I don't know if it's one of the things where they play to the level of their competition, but they did get Josh Gordon. This is, I guess, first time we've talked about it on this podcast. So the Patriots waived Josh Gordon because of an injury. Seahawks picked him up, so he could be former Patriots receiver, could be playing for Seattle against San Francisco. And then they'd have Josh Gordon, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. That suddenly turns into a really good receiving core in Seattle.
Yes, how does, and this would be, I sort of got it, but not really, so this might be good for the people listening. Why is it the Patriots released him for an injury when clearly it seems like, because he played this game against Seattle, right?
He didn't play in this game. He could have, but he did not.
So he'll be available for next week then.
Yeah, he ideally would play next week for the Seahawks.
Yeah. Now, see, to me, that doesn't seem like a super serious injury, particularly for a team like the Patriots who are really playing for November. It seems odd that they would cut him if they're, you know, looking forward to the playoffs.
I agree because, you know, they don't have Antonio Brown, obviously. They traded Demaryius Thomas, who isn't Demaryius Thomas from 2015, but they still traded Demaryius Thomas. And now they don't have Josh Gordon, and the receiving core, suddenly Mohamed Sanu becomes the best receiver. You got Julian Edelman, Philip Dorsett. But it very quickly went from one of the best receiving cores in the league to one of the thinnest in terms of depth there. And I don't know if they thought no one would pick him up. I don't know if no one said this, so I'm probably wrong, but is it possible Belichick just made a mistake by doing that? Because I don't think he'd just give up Josh Gordon.
Right, I know. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I can't figure out why he did it, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, great picker for the Seahawks. Maybe he just decided his defense was good enough that he didn't need any receivers.
I guess. I'm a big receiver guy, though. You know what I mean? And the defense didn't even look that good against Baltimore. I think the defense was more statistical because they're playing some bad teams. I think the even though they had better stats than the 49ers and New England's defense has been fantastic for my fantasy football team, I think we could kind of see that this wasn't as good of a defense as the numbers maybe suggested. And we saw last night Baltimore gave New England their first loss of the year.
Yeah, that was interesting. I was not expecting that to happen.
I kind of thought there was a shot. I honestly thought New England was going to win, but I felt like on the road at Baltimore – I just didn't think they were going undefeated. So that was one of the games that they could have lost. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Just like for the 49ers. Excuse me. I apologize. I don't know what that was. But just like for the 49ers, when they play Seattle on the road week 17, so last game of the year, I don't think they'll be 15-0 at that point. But that's a game they could lose. You know, just those road games, cold weather. They just got rid of Josh Gordon. Like, not surprised the Ravens won. And now, what are your thoughts on Lamar Jackson, just overall?
I think that he is on that level. I would say this is a pretty big tier. I mean, you could be a little bit more specific with your tiers than me, but quarterbacks like Matt Ryan, Nick Foles, Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's probably obviously much better than either of those other two guys. But basically what I mean is quarterbacks who, if you surround them with a good enough team, I feel pretty comfortable with them going to a Super Bowl, winning a Super Bowl. I think that Lamar Jackson definitely needs help, but I think that if he has the right team, and I'm not talking like a super team, but just like a pretty good team, I feel like you know, he'd be good enough to get to a Super Bowl, which is better than I think a lot of people thought he was going to be coming out of college.
Yeah, and honestly, from year one to year two, Lamar Jackson is so much better than, because there were legitimate concerns about his accuracy. The people complaining are saying, like, oh, he's pretty good for a running back. That was really just one person who said that. There weren't a lot of people who's there. Maybe in the NFL, there were some scouts that said, will you work out a receiver? But not a lot of media people, and I'm loosely including myself in that group. But they no one said he should play running back. The big thing with, like, draft analysts was, is he going to be a good quarterback? Can he be an accurate quarterback? Can he work on his intermediate passes? Because he can put tons of air on the ball, and that gives time to get the receivers under. But on a lot of the NFL routes where it's like 10-yard out, 15-yard dig, things like that, there were legitimate concerns about his accuracy and his ability to play from the pocket at Louisville. That in year one, we kind of saw that, and this year it's just unbelievable improvement. I think I don't even know if the NFL has this award necessarily, but I think he should absolutely be the most improved player.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, because last year, like, he was able to be sort of productive, and the Ravens were, like, better than I think people thought they were going to be. But it was a weird, like, not a sustainable offense with how much he's running. Obviously, he's still running a lot right now. But it looks like they've got a quarterback playing the position rather than, like, a high school football team in Texas or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're unbelievable. And their offense doesn't look like, I think, like last year, they were just like, we're only running it. We're only going to run it. That's our identity. Try to stop us. And they've opened it up more. And Lamar is really playing from the pocket a lot. And even at Louisville, we saw a lot of how athletic he was, but he wasn't necessarily scrambling. A lot of them were on designed runs. So to credit for Lamar Jackson, I think this is how he's always wanted to play, and he's just gotten better. I don't think they, like, the Baltimore Ravens, like, retrained him, like, oh, you want to take off. You need to play from the pocket. A lot of his runs at Louisville were designed quarterback runs just because Petrino, the head coach, was trying to take advantage of the best athlete in the country playing quarterback there. So, and that's probably you, Lamar, a few weeks ago talked about how he'd rather throw than run. I'm sure it's annoying to him how he, and to credit, he has incredible arm, but a lot people only view him as the athlete, and he wants to be viewed as a quarterback, as a throwing quarterback. That's why you play quarterback, and a lot of those athletes growing up who are quarterbacks, and they get the dual threat was meant to be literally he can throw and run, but it's become a stereotype for he can't throw. So that's why quarterbacks don't like Deshaun Watson. Same thing, didn't like that stereotype or that label. For that reason. So credit to Lamar Jackson. And I was one of the biggest, I don't know if this guy can do it in the NFL, and proving me 100% wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah. This is, I liked Lamar Jackson. Like I feel like this thing is going to work. I mean, certainly this year, I don't think the Ravens are going to be good enough to get to the Super Bowl or even very far in the playoffs. But yeah, no, I've never had somebody like quite turn my opinion quite like Lamar Jackson has.
Yeah, so shout out to him. Matt, someone that turned my opinion, I guess I'll say more confirmed my opinion than changed my opinion. And we've talked about this multiple times on the show, but Freddie Kitchens, Cleveland Browns head coach. They're 2-6. The one question I had, literally the only question I had for Cleveland going into the year, I'd say their offensive line was half a question mark. I thought it'd be okay. But what will it be like with Freddie Kitchens coaching the team? Because last year he was a running backs coach, not even a coordinator, and he literally just got the job because he gets along with Baker. I know we've talked about this because it sounds familiar, actually, now that I'm saying about it. But I'd say 99% of the time I'm not on fire someone. It sucks when people lose their job. But if Freddie doesn't get fired, Baker's going to lose his job. You know, like someone's losing their job there. And I don't think it deserves to be Baker. He's a better player than he's played this year. And I think the Browns will be improved. The back half of the schedule is a lot easier. I say that as they lost to the 2-6, now 3-6 Broncos yesterday. But Freddie Kitchens, I think, has more blame than any other team losing team in the NFL should be on Freddie Kitchens.
I know, yeah. The Browns have really failed expectations, which, I mean, they're the Browns. You know, shame on us for thinking that they would be good, because the Browns are the Browns of the Browns. But what concerns me, and like, I think you're right. I think Freddie Kitchens probably isn't a good coach, but at some point, don't the Browns just have to pick a coach? I mean, they've almost had as many coaches as they've had quarterbacks in recent years, you know? And like, it's just like, they're never going to be able to build anything if they don't just pick a coach and go with it.
I agree with you. Again, except for this, I 100% agree with you. Like Willie Taggart, for example, got fired from Florida State. You can't do anything in less than two years as head coach. There were Florida State fans saying he never beat Clemson and he never beat Miami, and that makes it sound like he's been there for 9 years and just can't beat the team. Is there less than 2 years? Florida State had so many problems going in, so many recruiting issues, institutional problems. The athletic department is literally running out of deficit. And they found $17 million to fire him. And like, that's a case, for example, where I think, or even Tennessee, honestly, where Jeremy Pruitt, like, they're such a train wreck. They've gotten better the last few weeks. But for them, they're just kind of stuck with Jeremy for a few more years because they made their bed, they got a lie in it, and it makes more sense to do that than to keep firing and firing and firing. But Freddie Kitchens just never should have gotten the job in the first place. It was like Mike Tomsula with the 49ers. I was more on Tom Sula keeping his job, but he was after Jim Harbaugh left the 49ers to go to Michigan. They hired the defensive line coach, Jim Tomsula. And after a year, they were basically like, oh, we shouldn't have hired him. That was our bad. And, you know, he's a nice guy, but he just shouldn't have been a coach in the first place. So I feel bad that he got fired and that Kitchens probably should lose his job. But the reality of situations for the Browns is I think it's better at this point to cut losses from a bad coaching hire than to a really bad coaching hire than to stick it out a few years. Because with most coaches, I think they deserve a chance. I just don't think, and I could be unfair in saying this, but I don't think Freddie's going to have a workout no matter what chance he gets.
Yeah, no, thanks. Well, and the other thing is he didn't really have enough time to develop. And so, I mean, I think it's unfair to say that like it'll never work out. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what happens if he spent more time as a coordinator. But he went from a running backs coach to an offensive coordinator to a head coach in eight months. And I think even he, I don't know if he would say this right now, but I think even he, you know, in a private moment would say that's just not enough time to learn the things that you'd need to learn to be a head coach.
It's complicated. Honestly, it's really complicated. And Matt, let's just curiosity here. Speaking of that, let's look at teams who, how many head coaching jobs do we think are going to be open? It's the Browns, obviously.
Yeah, the Browns.
Everyone else who's underperforming is like first year. Like, yeah, Adam Gase, I thought maybe the Jets, but he's in his first year, so that he's at least somewhat likely to get a shot. If Dallas doesn't make the playoffs or win the division, Jason Garrett, I could see getting out.
Oh, that'd be too bad. I like having Jason Garrett coach the Cowboys.
I think Dan Quinn, that's my number two. I think Dan Quinn in Atlanta, because the Falcons have gotten worse. I don't literally do not know how they're this bad, but they've gotten worse and worse and worse under Quinn, and especially the defense. He's supposed to be a defensive coach, and defensively they just cannot figure it out.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting. Yeah, that'll be one for sure. It's weird looking back at that Seattle team was so good, and it hasn't really worked out. I mean, I guess he's really the only one that left because the guy who's either Mormon or from Utah that was the offensive coordinator, he never actually left. He stuck around in Seattle, right?
The offensive, you know, coordinator. He's in. No.
He's the one who made
the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He's in Detroit now. I think that was more of like a mutual splitting up than a firing.
Right. Yeah. But it's weird, just like that team was so good, and just there hasn't really been a coaching tree that's gone away from Pete Carroll like you would have expected there to have been.
You're right. Yeah, Yeah, really, probably the most successful one because the Dallas defensive coordinator, Chris Richard, he was the defensive coordinator in Seattle, and that didn't work out super well, so he got let go. And he's doing, I think, okay in Dallas. But probably the most successful guy from that coaching tree is Robert Saleh, who was the linebackers coach. I think it was linebackers, but he was a defensive assistant in Seattle. And then Kyle Shanahan hired him to be the coordinator for the 49ers, and it took a couple years. And there are some people saying he should have lost his job after last year, but Shanahan stuck with him, and now it's at worst a top three defense in the NFL. So he's a name I could see probably getting a lot of head coaching opportunities next offseason as a defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh for the 49ers.
Nobody was really talking about the 49ers in the offseason. So what did they do to be good enough to be undefeated at this point?
Well, I think Nick Bosa is playing at a legitimate defensive player of the year level. First round pick, number two overall pick. They've drafted the last four, last five drafts, they've drafted defensive linemen. So the front seven is really fantastic. Richard Sherman is having a great year. I think people thought the downtrend in play would continue from Richard Sherman. So, you know, getting good cornerback play. And their second corner slot is an issue, but they're getting good cornerback play out of Richard Sherman. Their front seven is incredible. Fred Warner, BYU linebacker, our guy, he's been huge for them. And their other linebacker, Quan Alexander, tore his pec, so he's out for the year, but he's been really good defensively for him. And offensively, the biggest thing for the 49ers is they didn't have a receiver, and that showed, I guess, in a positive way because they led the league in rush. They at least did in going into week nine. I don't know if they still do or not, but they did going into week nine. Lead the NFL in rushing. And they're having a bunch of guys. They got Tevin Coleman, Mostert, I always pronounce his name wrong, and then Matt Breida. We're all splitting touches, doing fantastic. So bad for fantasy purposes, good for the 49ers. And Garoppolo doesn't turn the ball over. And they added Emmanuel Sanders, which I think he's a number two receiver on a good team, but it just adds so much depth, and he's instantly the 49ers' best receiver, non-counting tight end George Kittle. So the question marks for the 49ers were the secondary and the receivers, and they've answered that indirectly with the defensive front seven and the running game.
Yeah. And then, as you mentioned, they got Josh Gordon, and so now all of a sudden their receivers are really, really good.
Emmanuel Sanders, but yes. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Emmanuel Sanders, yeah, that's what I wanted to say. But anywho, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, instantly improved receiving core. And Garoppolo, he's playing good. Again, not turning the ball over. They're not throwing the ball downfield a whole lot, but they haven't had to. Against Arizona, he did show that more. And I think that the more you see Sanders integrated in the offense, that's going to be pushing the ball downfield more. Garoppolo probably has his best game of the season for the 49ers.
Yeah. No, Jimmy Garoppolo's another one of those quarterbacks that's like, if they have a good team, they can win a Super Bowl. Now, I think he needs a better team than like a Russell Wilson would, but he's like, I feel like they can win a Super Bowl with him at quarterback.
Yeah, I did mention on this podcast that I don't know if the Seahawks are very good, but I think they can win a Super Bowl because they got Russell Wilson. And the 49ers, I think they just need more things to go right than Seattle does because Russell Wilson erases so many mistakes that the rest of the Seahawks make.
Right.
Now, let me ask you this, Matt. Would you, in the NFC, people we think are title contenders, at least in loosely title contenders, you got the Niners, Packers, you got the Saints, and then just because they're going to be in the playoffs, you got the Cowboys and Eagles. We'll throw them in there for discussion. And then I'd say the Seahawks. Those are the group, and we'll say the Vikings as well. I think that'd be fair to the Vikings. Not all those teams are even going to make the playoffs, but those are kind of the teams you're looking at for who's going to come out of the NFC. There's seven teams that you can make an argument will represent the NFC, and not even one of them is going to even miss the playoffs. If you had to pick a favorite halfway through the year in the NFC, who would you pick?
I want to say the Eagles. They are just, you know, just the locker room doesn't seem to be right now. For whatever reason, they can't seem to figure it out, so I'm not going to say the Eagles. I'm going to say the Saints. You know, this is a team that I think is, you know, all of these teams are hungry. I think that the Saints are particularly hungry. I think they believe they're the best team in the NFL. I feel like they've been cheated, or not cheated, but got unlucky slash cheated for the last couple of years in a row. I think that Drew Brees wants to get another Super Bowl before he retires. Sean Payton, I think, really needs another Super Bowl for his legacy. If we're going to think of him as one of the all-time great coaches. So I think the Saints need a Super Bowl more than anybody else. I think they want it more than anybody else. And with Drew Brees, they're probably a better team than anybody else. I'm going to say the Saints.
You know, I'd probably agree with you if I'm picking a team, because they have that one loss to the Rams. That was the game Drew Brees got hurt. And the Rams have kind of gone downhill from there. I think they have the best roster. And Drew Brees, I trust more than Jimmy Garoppolo in the playoffs. So I think, again, great podcast content where we're both rolling with the Saints probably in the NFC, even though the 49ers are undefeated.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're who we think the best team are. Like, we don't have to pretend that we think that the Packers or something are going to get it if we don't think that.
So. That's true, yeah. So we're rolling the Saints. What about the AFC, man? That's really just, can anyone beat the Patriots in that conference?
Yeah, what's the deal with Patrick Mahomes? How much longer
so is he going to be out? I think he's going to come back.
Is he back?
This week didn't end up playing. I think he'll be back this next Sunday for the Chiefs, but that's not a medical opinion. That's just my understanding.
I want to see what the Patriots. I want to see what the Patriots do without Josh Gordon. You know, having this weaker receiving core, and then also to see how the defense does. You know, when we're getting to season or to week 14, 15, 16, they're still obviously going to be great, but if they slow down, if offensives start to figure them out a little bit, and obviously, you know, if there is a team with a powerful enough offense to get past them, it's going to be the Chiefs. It's either of those two teams. I know the Ravens just beat them. That probably doesn't happen in the playoffs, particularly because they're probably going to be playing in Foxborough. Yeah, but I'm probably picking the Patriots again. I know it's boring pick the Patriots every year, but that's just who's more likely to go.
Yeah, no, I honestly think, because it looks like even with that loss to Baltimore, the Patriots are two games ahead of the Chiefs. They're one game ahead of the Ravens, so the Ravens could end up getting home field advantage. I think the Ravens, not the Chiefs, would be the most likely team. And just that Colts game, of that their first loss of the year, that's really kind of bumming me out, honestly. I know Mahomes got hurt in that game, but that's kind of bumming me out on the Chiefs. So I'm probably going with, should I say the Ravens are going to the Super Bowl? Is that too recency bias for me?
I think that's fine.
I'm going to say Saints Ravens Super Bowl. I'm going to do it. And I probably regret doing that. And because every time I'd say bet against the Patriots, it never works out for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really think the Ravens can do it. I think they have, between Lamar Jackson, Mark Ingram's a great running back. Their secondary is great. They got Earl Thomas, Marlon Humphrey's there, and they got Marcus Peters, who's either going to strike out or hit a home run. But when he hits a home run, it's great for the defense. And yeah, they've been the most impressive team. I think they've even been more impressive than the Patriots with the Patriots 8-0 start. So I'm going Baltimore.
Baltimore. I would love to see Baltimore in the Super Bowl. That'd be really fun.
That'd be a fun suit. If let's say Baltimore did play the Saints, that'd be a rematch for Mark Ingram with his old team.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah, it's crazy. It's interesting to me that Mark Ingram is the Alabama quarterback or running back, excuse me, that's had the most success. I mean, he was good in college, obviously. But it's like, I mean, they've had a lot of really good college running backs, and nobody's been able to have quite the career Mark Ingram has. And even him, he's, you know, he's not like Le'Veon Bell or Todd Gurley or anything.
Yeah. So good for Mark. Matt, we got about 5 minutes left. So let me ask you this and we'll wrap up the show. What has been one thing from the last week of the NBA that has either surprised you or confirmed something, or what's your takeaway from the last week or so of the NBA?
You know, I wish that I would have said this on the podcast. I don't think anybody's going to believe me, but like Dwight Howard's good. And I feel like he's always been good. You know what I mean? Like if you look at these whole years, like, he hasn't been Orlando Magic Dwight Howard. I don't think he's Orlando Magic Dwight Howard right now. But, like, he's always been good. And, like, when they were talking about, it's like, okay, we can get Dwight Howard or Joakim Noah. I thought that was, like, the biggest no-brainer. Obviously, you get Dwight Howard. He's going to be, even off the bench, I feel like he's going to be an automatic double-double. And I feel like he's going to end up starting in the next month. But, yeah, he's good. He's still Dwight Howard.
Yeah, so that is not something I was even thinking about, but that's a good point. That's a really good point. Dwight Howard's been impressive for Lakers. I should have thought of this before saying it. I'm going to go with Miami, Matt. They've been legitimately good. Instead of just, I thought they could, you know, fill in that second tier in the East, but I think they've been legitimately good, especially when they got Jimmy Butler back. They're 5-1, and that doesn't mean a whole lot because, you know, six games into the season, but they've been really impressive, and I still think the Bucks are going to be – Bucks and Sixers are that number one, number two team. But I think the Heat, for me right now, they're legitimately the third best team in the Eastern Conference. And that's been my biggest thing from last week, especially with Butler back, but really the whole start of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Heat are interesting. I just – you know, I don't quite think they have the salary cap or the trade assets to turn into a title contender before – Jimmy Butler kind of ages out. And at that point, I don't know. I kind of worry about, you know, what they have a really bad salary cap issue. So I think they're going to need to pick up some draft picks if they're not going to be terrible in 5 years from now. But, you know, they're definitely better than I thought. I think Jimmy Butler... I think me and you like Jimmy Butler more than most people do. I think we think that the defense is important and that he's also, at least I think he's a more capable scorer than people, you know, really give him credit for. I think we saw that in Philadelphia. But I think, yeah, I mean, that's getting Jimmy Butler, I think, was a bigger deal than people thought it was. I think he's a closer to a superstar and a number one option than he usually gets credit for.
100% agree. Same with DeMar DeRozan. You know, I think we're both higher on Jimmy and DeMar DeRozan than a lot of people are. But yeah.
I mean, I'm definitely higher on Jimmy Butler than I am DeMar DeRozan. But I like DeMar DeRozan more than most people do, for sure.
And, Matt, there's a lot of time for things to go wrong in Miami. But so far, the experiment's been working.
Yes.
Well, Matt, let's wrap up. We're about at 40. Any closing thoughts before we hit the road?
Well, I think I saw you tweeted about this, but we've got Toronto and Seattle in the MLS Cup again. I'm not surprised that Seattle's in there. I did not pick them, but it doesn't surprise me they ended up there again. Toronto surprised me very much going through. I was very surprised that Toronto ended up making it all the way.
Yeah. Me too. I'd say I'm more surprised. It sounds like I'm more surprised. It's more because LAFC lost than Seattle won. It's more, you know, my faith in LAFC. But yeah, so it's the third time in 4 years that Seattle and Toronto are playing in the MLS Cup final. Each team has won one of the previous two, so this will be the de facto tiebreaker. And I'm maybe going to watch it.
Yeah, no, I'll probably watch it. It should be a good game.
I'll watch part of it for sure. I probably won't watch the whole thing, but I'll probably watch part of it.
Yeah. No, these rivalry games, especially these rivalry games like Real Salt Lake, Kansas City, where they're born out of just playing against each other frequently rather than location, are really fun. So I think this is going to be a good game.
Yeah, I'm excited. So I'm excited for that. Excited for seeing that. I'm excited to hear from all of you how you felt about the episode and all the episodes we do here. And let us know by subscribing, rating, reviewing. 5 stars only. It's on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Audioboom. It's a podcast that my taco waitress in Seattle described as, "Oh, I think I might have heard of that." So come see what the critics are raving about. I guess if you're here at this point, you've already seen because you listened to a whole episode. But again, we really appreciate everybody that doing that. Really helps out us out a lot. And it's also just fun to hear what y'all like about it, everything like that. So make sure you do that. Take 10 seconds to do it. I appreciate that, and we'll talk to y'all next week.